Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. It's great to have you with us here on a Saturday afternoon. I am live in studio for a change. I don't know if you can even tell from one week to the next whether I'm live or otherwise. But we're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time if we're not preempted by a ball game. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we are also rebroadcast on Sundays at on A2Zen.fm at 3 p.m. Pacific time, and archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. Lots of opportunities for you, and we also have lots of information for you as well. And I'm looking forward to talking with our guest today, and we're going to do that in just a moment. Donna Sebo will be with us, and she will also be taking your calls at 564-1290. That's 805-564-1290 or 866-564-1290 if you have a question for her. And we'll be questioning her in just a moment as well, so stay right where you are. Had a beautiful and rather profound, or maybe not so much profound as much as it was thought-provoking, drive down the San Marcos Pass this afternoon, Highway 154, if you're looking on a map. And I like to call it the hill, the ride down the hill. I know some people don't like that for a lot of different reasons, but I actually did some research on the definition of a mountain versus a hill. There is no definitive definition as to what the height must be before it's referred to as a mountain versus a hill. Be that as it may, semantics aside, it was a rather thought-provoking drive. Back to my train of thought here. And I'm listening to my music coming down the hill and thinking about the events of this week. I can even incorporate into it the events of the last 5 to 10 minutes before coming on the program live in an attempt to connect with my guest. And I have to say, I've seen this happen on more than one occasion with people where they have trouble with their phones. They can't dial out. The phone application, in this case, the telephone, isn't functioning properly. It will not dial through. So I did what any computer savvy individual would do in a situation like that. I rebooted the phone. It didn't help. I did make contact with the guest who we do have on the line, but what was so interesting was the fact that this past week has been filled with a variety of these technological bizarre things, and I haven't been able to nail down why, other than the fact that we were coming out of maybe it was residuals from a retrograding Mercury. And of course, we will talk next week with Beth McDonald about that. But we're going to talk right now with Donna Sebo, who we have on the line, and find out maybe she's been experiencing similar kinds of things over the last few days and even today, in terms of something that I read, Donna, the other day that and it was actually in one of those magazines that we get as talk show hosts. Technology is actually making us more miserable than happy.
Oh, Richard, I'll tell you what, technology is so much fun, and I was listening to you talking about some of the challenges with phones, and of course, I also have a show, and I will tell you, I have nothing but the deepest appreciation for the engineers that have to deal with the gremlins that attack technology. And there's so many blessings that come with it, but at the same time, it's got two faces to it. It can be an extreme agitation, and one of the things that we have discovered in the many years of broadcasting and the engineers that I've worked with, many times there are power surges or just like you were talking about the phone, mm-hmm. for some reason, you just can't make a connection. And I really feel that in many respects, we're on a very primitive basis with understanding how we can utilize energy. Mm. But that is something that we have to grow into and grow through. And I'll tell you, sometimes the good old-fashioned phone lines really do work better than a lot of the wireless technology, because we have all of these various vibrational frequencies. That sounds sort of woo-woo, doesn't it? But we do have those different frequencies we can't see, we can't taste them, we will very rarely feel them.
Right.
And yet they've been there since time immemorial, and they can really interfere. And I know up in Alaska, I was talking with some people that deal with sophisticated levels of technology, and if there is a particular activity going on with the sun, where there's huge amount of sunspot activity, mm-hmm. it interferes with their equipment like you wouldn't believe.
Well, so, I would have no
amazing.
Problem. Well, I'd even take your example of a vibration back to even more primitive, and that is the two tin cans and the string, because that's exactly what travels down that string is a vibration, and it travels from one end to the other. But I have to say that, 10 or 15 minutes ago, I would have given my eye teeth for a rotary phone with hard copper wire, folks.
I'm with you. Boy, I am with you. I have had times when you could no more reach somebody than a man in the moon, and I have such a compassion and empathy for people that are like in New York and New Jersey and different places, that to communicate, the cell towers are down. We take so much for granted.
Oh, absolutely.
Without realizing, and that's one of the reasons why I refuse to give up my landline phone, because I do broadcast five times a week. And I just say, thank you, but I will pay the extra money. And I was talking with a number of people this past month, said they have the same feeling because they have been in environments where there have been storms. They said, my cell phone won't work.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any kind of emergency situation, the lines are just jammed. You can't get through anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But my landline worked, and the Reader's Digest had quite an extensive article on it about a month ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. By the way, before we go much further here, first of all, I'm going to remind our listeners that you are taking calls today.
I sure am.
805-564-1290 or 866-564-1290. But let me have you clarify for our listeners, and this isn't a question of, okay, well, what are the restrictions, but more to the point, what kind of questions will you take?
I'll take about any kind of question, because if I don't get the information, then I will tell people I don't get information. What I'd like to share with your listening audience, Richard, is that I feel that I'm an information resource. These are skills that I have used for most of my life. And when I started using them professionally, and I've shared this with so many thousands of people through the years, it's important to realize I am an information resource. It doesn't mean what I say is gospel. I am meant to facilitate an empowerment in people's lives. And the tools of mind can be used in a multitude of ways. But there's no gimmicks, there's no games here. I'm thousands of miles away from you. We're talking via the wonders of technology here at the moment. And wherever someone calls in from, all I need from them is their first name or their initial, and we'll just let it go at that. I don't want information from them. I don't need a birth date from them. Let me just give you information, and then you're welcome to ask a question, and I would encourage just one question per person so we can get in as many callers as we possibly can.
Right.
And then be succinct in your question. Don't just say, what's my love life going to be like in 3 years? I don't want that kind of a question. Not that that's a bad question to ask, but you need to understand, if you want answers, you have to ask questions that are going to be addressing what you want an answer to. And this is something that's important for people. Clarity is important. And sometimes you may not have it, so ask your question anyway. But that's how direct I am, Richard. I don't play games with people's minds or with whatever their circumstances they might be going through. And I'm usually just as intrigued with the information that comes through me as people are.
Well, on this program, what we're always looking for are those new ways of living. We're trying to address the new paradigms. And I have to say, and I've addressed this in the last couple of programs very briefly, and we've discussed it. So I'm thinking it's perfectly appropriate to talk about here, because I would like to get your impressions, not necessarily intuitively or psychically necessarily, although certainly, obviously, the floor is open in that regard to you. But I have to say that I have, in spite of the fact that I have had, how can I put this? Nominal contact with previous popes of the Roman Catholic Church. I was privileged to be in the physical presence within, oh, I don't know, maybe 15, 25 yards at the most, of Pope John Paul II when he visited Phoenix, Arizona back, I think it was in the 80s or early 90s. And certainly, it was quite an experience, the two times that I was able to do that. And Mother Teresa as well, when she visited Phoenix back in the 80s as well. I am so taken with this, with Pope Francis and his attitude. And I have to say, I go back to two lines that are quoted by him, or quoted to him, on the day of his election. Number one was when they tried to put on the papal robes and all of the accoutrement, you know, the mitre, the gold mitre, and all of the fancy stuff. He said, no, you put it on. And the line that was quoted him, in addition to you put it on, is, the carnival is over. And the second thing that he said was, and I think it was actually his first speech, I think the next day, either at the Mass or what have you, had to do with the church should be taking care of the poor, and the church should be poor. Now, I'm not singling out the Catholic Church here, because the Pope has always been a spokesperson speaking to all peoples of the world. And it just seems to me that this man, coming from the background that he does, as far as his vocation, is really calling everyone, and he means everybody, from the lowest to the highest, within and without the church, to start simplifying their lives and caring for one another regardless. And that's not to say that message hasn't been brought out, but he seems to be really the epitome of it.
I think this is a man that wants to walk the walk, not talk the talk. And I think because of his level of maturity and the fact that in his actual life of experience, he walked the walk, just didn't talk the talk. And I think that the group of decision makers that opted to choose him, I don't know that they really realize the impact that this is going to have.
Yeah, that was my thought.
You're looking at an organization that is one of the wealthiest organizations on this planet, period. It is a government unto itself. It is a country unto itself, although, albeit it's one of the tiniest. But regardless, the power has been acknowledged through the centuries. And what you have today, and I think that this may be an indicator, is that a shift is necessary. A shift is necessary because what has evolved is almost like a cancer. Maybe I'd use a fungal infection.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is spreading rapidly. It has been spreading for quite a while throughout the world. It's not just a little spot here, a little spot there. It is a fungus of distortion where the priorities of ethical values have been overtaken. And so what needs to be done, I'll call it the hydrogen peroxide special, and I think it's going to have to be diluted a little bit, maybe, to get it done, but you have to really look at what the root cause of the distortion is all over the world. You look at every government, including our own, and I don't want to get into politics necessarily.
Sure.
But you look at whether it is in the private sector, in the business sector, in so many parts of the environment of life where it's time for a cleanup. And if you look at history, this is what happens when things get too far off the beaten path. And what it takes is the average individual waking up to their own personal responsibility and saying, enough is enough. And that has to be done on the individual basis, and then the expectation and the demand that those that are put into decision-making positionings, that they be an example of the finest and the best. And that means you have to purge out what is not working.
Yes.
You have to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And it is something that sometimes takes some pretty drastic action. But there's a process that goes on with this. And if someone loves history, as I do, and you go back through history, you look at every generation having to contend with this in one way or another. I don't care what the culture is. I don't care where you are on this planet. Mother Nature has to do this frequently. There are things sometimes that have to be eliminated. There are challenges. We always, this is part of what growth is about. It's how do we expand? How do we make our environment and our world better than perhaps it is?
Yeah.
What do we do? But we need to stop expecting that somebody out there in whatever land is going to fix it for us. We have to start right where we are.
Yeah.
And I think that he is starting right where he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You raise an interesting point that pulls to mind a question that was asked of me as in conversation the other day. We were talking about animals and their processes of life and humans and just life in general. And the question came up, and I don't want to get real graphic here, but the question that was brought to the forefront at that time was, why is there what we deem an element of waste in the cycle of life? Now, you can take out man's insatiable desire to produce and consume. Put that aside. Just take a look at nature. Why? This was an interesting observation that was made, and I really had to think about it for a few minutes. And I'm not going to say anything about it in terms of my observations, but I'm going to let you do that. But that's kind of where it was coming from, is why is there what we call waste byproducts in the process of life? Why couldn't it have been designed without that?
Actually, I think if you stand back and you look at things in a bigger picture, you'll find there really is no waste.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is that when you really get down to the quintessential aspect of life, it's all energy, period. Energy reconstitutes itself in many different ways. Perspectives. If you take the human being out of the picture, period, you're just looking at Mother Nature, often our perceptions are filtered through our own experiences, and until we can let go, the waste as we may perceive it may not really be waste. We look at, to be graphic, poop material, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The systems of life are developed. I'll take hummingbirds out in our yard. Now, those hummingbirds are out feeding on flowers. They're exquisite little creatures. They have a waste system. That waste system contributes to something in the natural scheme of things. There are microorganisms that will feed on that waste. It could be a fungal organism, it could be any number of things. what nature does so frequently, what we perceive as waste is not necessarily waste. It is something that is supporting another part of the system. Man is endowed with a capacity of looking at how do we utilize things. Man, if man is educated or is wise enough to understand certain things, tries to work with nature, not against it. Anyone that has had an association with Aboriginal cultures, various environments, whenever you're dealing with a human being, you are dealing with someone that has to be adaptable. If they cannot adapt, they're going to move on someplace else. If they kill off all the food source they have around them, they have to move on. Polynesians did that many centuries ago. There are islands that have been discovered where they had been somewhere. They literally decimated all of the sea life that was around them, and they had to move on. They had no food supply. That's why the ancient Hawaiians developed aquaculture. That is why the old kahunas would put taboos on fishing in certain elements of the sea, because they knew from the ancient ones that had been before them, they could tap out their food source, even though they didn't have a huge population. I just use them as an example. So they were into aqua farming. They had shrimp ponds. They had all kinds of things. They did this long before any of us in the Western world even caught up with the concept. So they learned that they had to work with nature. They did this. And so there was a harmony in their environment until there was a disruption. But there was really no waste. There was this understanding that you had to be a good custodian of the environment you were in. As human beings, our filters, due to our experiences and what we have been indoctrinated with, often filters our capacity of being able to see a bigger picture. We're just not there. Look at how many centuries it has taken from our historical perception of seeing the universe as this exquisite, and I mean really exquisite design. We cannot begin to wrap our minds. Scientists can't. They don't know how to do this. They can't possibly. Wrapping the mind around the factor that the universe is a living thing. We, for so many generations, were so encapsulated in our thinking with our lone little portion of the world that we occupied. People have been tortured, butchered, murdered because they saw something bigger than what the people around them could see. We have the same problem today. That's nothing new. To expand beyond that, it took the Hubble telescope. And we are still getting this awareness of something that's so far beyond our capabilities. We're making up terms, dark holes, dark spaces. There's nothing there. Well, of course there's something there, just because we can't see it, because we don't know how at this time. So I would have to disagree with the person that said there's so much waste.
Well, I'll clarify for the person who asked the question. It wasn't so much that. It was just really the question, why is there that element? And that the main reason why I did not need to, on this program, express my observations was because they're the same as yours. Physicists would, agree with you 100%. It's all energy, which, of course, then, begs the question from my perspective in terms of what we do eat and what we do consume. You know, what difference does it make? If it's all energy, it all comes from the same place. What difference does it make what I put inside this body if it's all just energy? And I know that there are some who have reached a heightened state of awareness or enlightenment, if you will, or some would refer to them as ascended masters, who literally can eat anything and it will have no effect on them because they have transcended this world from that on a spiritual level to where they know what this stuff is. We, on the other hand, haven't reached that level yet of higher consciousness. And so, yes, it does make a difference what we ingest into this body. There are things that can hurt us and harm us and destroy the body.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a very natural phenomenon.
Yeah.
I was just... See, that is something, the wisdom of the sages that have understood this for centuries. There are laws for balance. We are creatures that have certain types of cellular structure. And there are those that would say you could never grow an aloe vera plant in pure water. They need sandy soil. Well, I can tell you I've grown aloe vera plants in plain water.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Oh, yes, I did. Yes, I did. Now, what happened? The aloe vera, somehow or another, adapted. I've had people come to my house and they said, am I seeing what I'm seeing? Yeah, that's an aloe vera plant in a mason jar filled up with tap water. Mm. Nothing added to it, and it survives. Yet, that is something that if you go and you put it into sandy soil, now this isn't logical, but it's happened to me. You put it into sandy soil, if you have too much water in that soil, it'll rot. Why does the plant in one environment, when it's in nothing but water, survive?
Hmm.
It's an adaptability. Why is it if you put it in a sandy soil and you have a lot of water, it will rot? What's going on here? It is an adaptability factor.
Let's talk a little bit about that on the human level. Again, I love the conversations that I get into between these radio programs. And there was an interesting premise that was raised. The thesis, if you will, thesis statement would be man did not originate from the planet Earth. And the thesis that follows basically says that take a look at every other species on the planet except man. Every other species on the planet has what it needs to live where it lives. Polar bears do not live along the equator, and iguanas do not live in the Arctic or Antarctic, just to use extreme examples.
Mm-hmm.
They both have a physicality and physical structural makeup that allows them to live in those environments. Taken out of those environments, they will die. They cannot survive. And it's very unlikely that they would be able to adapt in that specific generation. Whereas man must build structures, and I'm thinking that clothing is less for protection and more of a social convention, but nonetheless, and do all of these other things to protect himself from the elements, from those the various storms that might crop up, and on and on and on. Certainly earthquakes and volcanoes and tsunamis, not much we can do about that. That we're even the other creatures are at the whim of Mother Earth in that regard. But that was the thesis, if you will, of one individual as we were talking, that man did not originate here. Your thoughts?
I concur. I think that there's many species that did not originate here. There's, I don't know how many thousands, there's literally millions of species, whether it's bugs or, you know, various types of animals that have come and gone throughout the millennia that this planet has been in place. And I think that there are other places, and I have to say, I've had very strong personal experiences where I feel this. And I don't think it's woo-woo. I think it's very reasonable that the human being, as we know it, has gone through, in some situations, a cultivation. That there are planets, you know, let's face it, if we had a certain situation occur with this planet, one of the first things that would be done if we were in a positioning of sophistication, if this planet was at the end of its cycle, which it won't be for billions and billions of years, but let's just say it was, we'd be looking for some place else to transport to. How would we perpetuate our species? And there are those species that have, because of shifts that have been done planetarily, and they have evidence of this today, where they did do an adaptation. You look at some of the reptiles that have been around for God knows how many long times. I mean, the crocodile, the alligator, the cockroach. I mean, we have no idea how long it's been around. Well, there are these species that somehow or another may find themselves transported into another environment. So they have to go through an adaptation. And this has happened through the millennia. And I do believe that we were brought here, our ancestors, a long, 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 long time ago. And there is evidence of hundreds of thousands of years ago that the human being was here and was cohabitating and actually was quite sophisticated in many ways. But it's very difficult for people, again, dependent on their filter. They often want to make something extreme beyond extremes, but life struggles to continue. And it is just amazing to be aware of the sophistication that life is. I'm in awe of it. I really am. I just think it humbles you so quickly. When you think about the composition of the human body, just that all by itself, you just take one little section of it, just a square inch of skin, and the worlds that's within that square inch of skin, it's mind-boggling. And so often we take things for granted. We don't really show an appreciation. We're not willing to go beyond our own superficiality. But I will say again, I think that this planet, at some time, when it was appropriate, was seeded with human beings. I don't think it's any different than our putting seeds in the ground to propagate crops. I think that life does what it does, and I think that there's many different forms of life that exist that we have not even had the pleasure of becoming aware of. And I think Gene Roddenberry, the physicist that Gene Roddenberry worked with to put together the scripts of other peoples from other parts of galaxies, I think we're going to have perhaps the privilege in our own lifetime of being able to find out more about that. And not coming from a positioning of fear, but from a positioning of knowledge. And I think it's going to evolve, and I just chuckle to myself. I remember thinking that when I first saw Star Trek so many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so impressed with that, and I said, this is real. I remember them talking with a little button on their chest. Well, we're getting there. Our technology is just exploding. We're going to be able to communicate. It's like in my newsletter that I've got coming out this coming month. I thought, gee whiz, my personal transporter isn't working. And I had a particular situation that I'm writing about in my newsletter. And I had to chuckle when I found that I myself writing that, but we're evolving to that.
Yeah. And I dematerialized in the wrong place. I don't know what happened, but I dematerialized in the wrong place.
Well, I think we move forward, but we are in a fascinating cycle here.
Yeah.
Because we are coming forth, one, with a level of technology that is amazing on so many levels. On the other level, there is this awareness that we cannot become too detached from the real realities of life because we're still going to have to deal with paying our bills. We're still going to have to deal with illness. We're still going to have to deal with so many components in life that technology is not going to be able to take care of.
Yeah. Well, you know, I still have to chuckle when I was when I came across that one headline in that magazine about how technology is actually making us more miserable than happy. And here's a guest who you can have on to talk about it. It's like, why do I need him to come on and talk about it? I already know.
Well,
I'm pretty cognizant of where we're going. And To pull your example further forward into the modern day, even the 21st century, although ironically, I was watching a program that was made in 1990, which was actually Star Trek: Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
They had, and this was in 1990, this particular episode, but the series was around that time, before cell phones proliferated the population. And now we're talking about cell phones, not those giant handsets. I mean, you know, those big old things. Okay. Those were referred to more as mobile phones, I think. And then we got into the handset that flip phone or it didn't flip closed and those kinds of things. You take a look at the technology the 1990s version, the Next Generation series, and you actually see the modern day iPad, notepad, the single sheet of material, and they're looking at the screen and they're moving their fingers around and they're touching and things are happening. And we are doing that less than 20 years later. And you can only imagine, and this is one of the things that's been said quite often of science fiction, that even if it seems utterly bizarre today in the context of that story, it won't be, because it will become a reality. And I think that the greatest example of that actually goes back about 100 years to the story of Jules Verne's, Jules Verne and the flight to the moon.
Absolutely true. I will tell you that one of my opportunities, and this was back in 2001 or 2002, I interviewed a physicist that had written a book about the famed scientist Richard Feynman. And he was a protege of this brilliant, brilliant man. And he actually was one of the writers for Star Trek.
Mm.
So what you have and what people are not aware of is that with many of these major organizations, and this was the case with AT&T, when it used to be called Ma Bell, they had their think tanks, and they would invite the most brilliant minds, male or female, to become a part of their team. And they would actually research colleges, et cetera, to find these people and say, I want you to go and I want you to play. I want you to pretend. I want you to come up with these thoughts. And what Gene Roddenberry did, because he was very much a futurist, he had the concept and it was taken further, but he would work with these people and they would design the items, the components that would go into the backdrops that we just assume should be here. And that really, in my mind's view, was to set up the thinking for those people watching it, regardless of their age, to set up the thinking so that it would be acceptable. And I find the universe really intriguing. It was said not all that long ago, in fact, at the beginning of 2000, when a very, very highly respected scientist being interviewed, I believe it was in Sweden, and was on the show Beyond 2000, where they were presenting technologies that were way, way ahead of the year 2000. And I think this was programming that was done in the late 1990s. He had come up with a way of dealing with certain types of breast cancer where you just did not ever have to do any surgery. Mastectomy was not necessary. The barbarism, you know, the barbaric approach of thinking that we have relative to this particular component of disease. And he was interviewed, and I'll never forget, at the end of the interview, the person that was speaking with him said, how long do you think it's going to be before we have this available to the women and men of the world, but especially the women, so that they can get rid of these barbaric techniques? And this physician said, I will be long gone, I will be dead, because the average in medicine in adopting technology that moves away from what isn't working towards what is working, it's 50 years on average before it is adopted. And this applies into so many medians of environment, whether it has to do with aqua farming, whether it has to do with medicine, whether it has to do with products. I mean, we have had people that have invented things. In fact, there's one item that I just recently became aware of called the Rife Microscope, R-I-F-E.
Matter of fact, I am extremely familiar with that because I narrated the DVD, the video, of the Rife Frequency Generator. And the Rife Microscope, for those who don't know, was the first microscope created by Royal Raymond Rife to be able to view his experiments of living tissue. Every time he went to, affix a frequency, a vibration to a particular diseased cell, and this was the intent, he had to use dead tissue, but that it didn't help him. So he had to create a microscope that allowed him to do that, and that's what you're referring to.
That is what I'm referring to, and you can go to the World Research Foundation.
Yeah.
WRF.org, I believe it is. It's either .org or .com, and you can find out more about this. But here we have a man in the early 1900s that comes up with this, and it is still in existence, but he was able to discern the vibratory color frequency mm-hmm. of these cells. Yep. And he also learned that you could take this cellular structure and literally disable it.
Yeah.
Without any medication, without anything like this. Okay, now this is just one little speck of something that's been brought out that's gotten lost. And it takes over 50 years, many times, for someone somewhere to implement it. There is something on the web that was invented by Bruce De Palma. He's dead now, but he invented the N-machine, which allowed you to create energy with motion that could propel engines where we wouldn't have to be dependent on fuels as
right,
we do today.
Right.
So it's all on the internet. It's there. He made it public knowledge.
Yeah.
Because when he came out with it, his life was threatened because this would disarm and disable an industry. Well, we live in a very interesting time because information is being disseminated at a phenomenal rate. And there is so much information that's out there, it actually almost becomes like a bog. It weighs people down.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it means that people like Steve Jobs that says, all right, let me put the thinkers together. Let's come up with these concepts and let's put them out there. Let's make it happen. So it does happen. And the mentality of the public, because of and all backstep to science fiction concepts, movies like The Matrix,
mm-hmm.
movies about time travel, all of these things that have been feeding into the consciousness that registers on a subconscious level, someone somewhere says, well, we could implement this. We can do this. We can do that. But we might have to do it. We have to get it out there, get it disseminated, and then we can go to the next step. And so the good thing about our time frame is the openness of people adapting. The downtime or the downside of it is that sometimes these changes are coming in so fast that we're not able to absorb the ripple effect comfortably that it produces and integrate a wisdom about how to recycle products, materials, how do we incorporate this into our environment so that it is a blessing, not a hindrance, so we don't poison ourselves, so we don't poison other creatures. How do we work with a balance? So here we are in this progressive cycle on one hand, but yet we've got a tremendous learning curve we have to go through on the other. And I just find it amazing, but we're speeding up. And this is something that necessity, being the mother of invention, we can look at all of the disarray that a human being, let's go full cycle back to the waste. Look at all of the waste that's floating out in the middle of the Atlantic or the Pacific that's converging because of cycles.
Oh, and those gyres, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, those big, it's 1,000 miles wide or something.
Oh, yeah.
All of the garbage, and it's floating there. Well, someone has decided, let's go out and pick up the trash. Let's recycle it. Let's do this. So people are coming up with concepts. The reason we're aware of it is because we're being told about it. Mm-hmm. We're becoming educated.
Yeah.
So there's a whole generation of thinking and a whole new opportunity for businesses. There's a whole new economic modality that is actually going to war with the old established paradigms that go, oh my God, how we can't make this shift here, so we got to keep all of this old stuff here.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got death throes occurring on one level, old establishments in thinking, and not knowing how to adapt and shift and change, and yet we have this other modality coming in because of the realities of how we're affecting ourselves, the unborn children, the animals that we live with, all of this. So when I look at it and I stand back, yes, I think we have to be aware of the toxicity we've got here.
Yeah.
The new pope, coming back full circle to that, we have someone that says, it's time for us to be responsible. You have that. You have those shifts. They must occur, and they're occurring with an intensity. And so the new pope, as you were talking about earlier, says, enough with the gimmicks and the games.
Yeah.
Enough with this. I'm in this position of responsibility. Let's walk the walk. Talk is cheap. Let's do what we need to do. So he is setting an example,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
this is all part of it. So when you think about how our conversation started out, Richard,
yeah.
with what we started out with, and we come back full circle to it, it's there is no waste. It's this ongoing process.
Yeah. Well, I only have one thing to add to that. Will you stop reading my mind? Because that's where I was going to. I says, okay, let's bring it back to where we started. Okay, we've done that. Donna Sebo is my guest. You have a radio show. You have a website. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I
and just, why you have it.
Okay, I have my radio show. I started with this show in 2001. I'm celebrating my 12th year. I'm on 5 days a week, and it is a joy to me. It has enabled me to have a PhD in life that I would never get from a college. And it enables me to bring to the listening audience the many, many paradigms of thinking, approaches, insights that people have had, experiences. And my show is all about personally empowering people. And I'm on Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 every morning on bbsradio.com, station number 1, and it's the Donna Sebo Show. And I do it, not, it doesn't make money for me. I do it because I have a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a passion for reading, for learning, and I have a passion for people and for life. And I really believe that for all of the garbage we get dumped on us in media, we need to have people like you and like me and like others that want to make this life something that we should be excited about, realizing that each and every person has a value. My website is Delphi, just like the Oracle, Delphi, DelphiInternational.com. And I, on there, I have my newsletter. People can get a free copy if they want every month. I want to communicate. It's all about communication, and I love my psychic work because, again, I feel like it empowers people, and it's done a great deal for my life, and that is what I'm about, Richard, and it's about speaking before groups and sharing things that I learn with other people because I think the only way we are going to be people that empower this experience of life is by, number one, never closing our minds to new levels of learning and education, to being adaptable. No matter what your age, you are never going to know it all. And it is important to be open, not that you have to be the garbage can of the universe, but to be open to saying, what if this is a possibility?
Mm-hmm.
What can I learn? Maybe this person has something to teach me. Maybe I have something to teach them. But we're a communication of life on so many different levels, and I just feel like we should be so grateful that we have the wonderful opportunity with technology to communicate, whether it's via radio shows like what we're doing, Richard, or television or the internet or books or CDs or DVDs, whatever the modality is, we have developed this, and how wonderful it is. We should get excited about life.
Yeah, and I would add one more to that, and basically say that if you're doing all of those things, then you don't even have to concern yourself with what I'm about to say, and that is, be careful about what you do take in. Donna, I don't know if you've ever heard me say this or not, but on this radio program, I give a disclaimer at the end of the program. And I tell people about how you need to be careful about what you listen to. And that if you've been listening to this program, it's too late. You have already heard what has been said. Now you have to deal with it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but somewhere down the road, something's going to click. And you're going to say, you know, I heard that program way back then about this subject and these things and blah, blah, blah. And you're going to have to deal with this information. I'm irrelevant. It wasn't Richard Dugan's program or Tell Me Your Story or Donna Sebo, but it was the information that was brought out. And that's why we have to be very, and I think this is a very appropriate word, Donna, we have to be very discriminating about what we allow ourselves to be around in terms of not just information, whether it be print or audio or visual, but even individuals. If there are people in your life that are just not, and we're not talking about a rally section, okay, that's just, it's a bunch of cheerleaders. Yeah, go, go, go. But we're talking about people who are at the very least, supporting you and saying, hey, go for it, man. What a great idea. You know, it's your vision. You have to follow through with it. We're with you in terms of supporting you, as opposed to people who, oh, it'll never work. No, don't even bother. Go back to your 9-to-5 day job and just do what the man has told you to do. Be a part of the machine and just forget about that stupid, visionary, futuristic woo-woo stuff. Those are the kind of people you don't need in your life. You need people that can help you, that can support you, that can encourage you. And so to that end, I would say that if you're doing the things that Donna has already said, you won't have to worry about that because you're going to be too busy and too well surrounded by individuals that are there to support you. And Donna, wouldn't you agree, too, that if that's what you're doing, the old systems, the old ways of doing things, even though I do agree with your general concept about going to war against them, they'll die away. They will eventually just die away because of neglect. Because if there's nobody minding the store, what difference does it make? So I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program today and encourage people to go to your website. And again, it's Delphi.com?
No, Delphi International.
Ooh, okay. Yes. Why not
Delphi
Universal?
International.com.
DelphiInternational.com. And you can also, I'm sure, just type into Google Donna Sebo, and boom, you're going to go there. And also on the BBS website as well to listen to radio programs. Donna, I want to thank you again for joining us. It's been an interesting conversation. It's amazing the places that we've gone with it. And as you have so eloquently brought it full circle.
Oh, I love it. Richard, it's always such a pleasure to be able to chat like this. I think that your listeners are very fortunate to know that you are open to so much diversity in your subject matter, and you're not afraid to ask the questions. And I think that we must be willing to question.
Yeah.
If we don't question, then we're nothing more than robots.
Absolutely. Well,
and it's important we recognize that our minds are always open to development and expansion, and that makes
absolutely
life exciting.
Absolutely.
Really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, that's going to do it for this program. I am Richard Dugan. Again, my guest, Donna Sebo. You have been listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Until next Saturday, love to Lal.